have been talking a lot about police officers, and we're kind of tired of that, aren't we? But there's a topic that involves police officers that I would like to talk about that's not really on the same topic. And that is, about a week and a half ago, a 37-year-old mother was out picking up some pizza for her daughter, and tragically, she was killed when a police cruiser barreled into her near Ashland and Irving Park Road. And I don't know if you saw the video. It's really hard to watch. It's just a horrendous crash in that intersection. Three other passengers in another vehicle were injured in the crash, as well as the two officers who were chasing what appears to be a murder suspect. One of the police officers, unfortunately, has a very severe head trauma. And there was an editorial this past week in the Tribune about the danger of police chases, and I wanted to talk about it because I hear about it all the time, and here to talk about it is attorney Tim Kavanaugh. He's one of the very few lawyers in the country who's tried and won a case involving a deadly police chase. And this happened in Chicago 20 years ago. He's a member of the Kavanaugh Law Group, attorneys who are nationally recognized litigators with over $500 million in verdicts and settlements across the country. And he's been a guest before on the show. Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing really well. This crash is just so horrible. And one of the things that I saw is that there was a study done that showed that there was an average of 355 people who died annually in police chases across the country, nearly a rate of one per day. That's just an astounding amount of people, considering that the police are there to serve and protect. What are the rules on police chases in the Chicago Police Department, Tim?
Yeah, well, this instant crash obviously is very, very disturbing, and we have videotape of it. In the midst of this COVID pandemic, we are also in the midst of an epidemic of police pursuits. And, the city of Chicago has their own police pursuit policy, and anyone can look it up. You can go right on the Google it and find out what the CPD Emergency Vehicle Operations Pursuits Policy is. But it's, I'm a lawyer. I've been a lawyer 32 years. It's an 11-page document that, you almost have to be a lawyer to read it, and it can make your head dizzy. Obviously, police pursuits are important. It's the police job to get the bad guy. But as you mentioned, the Department of Justice came out with this study over the last 20 years that nearly one person a day, nearly half of them, innocent victims, are killed in police pursuits. So this policy is long and it's lengthy, and I'm happy to kind of go through it and tell you what it says.
Well, I guess I'd like to know, just right to the point, is does it matter what the nature of the crime is? So, for instance, if you're pursuing someone who maybe stole a wallet, let's say, or in this case that we're talking about, the guy was a really bad guy. I mean, he was accused of murder, and so it was important, and maybe he was a danger to society. Does that matter in the analysis on how aggressive the police need to chase the person who's fleeing?
The short answer is yes. The city of Chicago pursuit policy, they have a balancing test where they try to have the police officers determine what the risk is to apprehend the fleeing suspect and whether that outweighs the level of inherent danger created by a motor vehicle pursuit. Sounds like a lawyer drafted it.
Yeah,
but they take into account like what speeds are going to be involved, the volume of pedestrian traffic or vehicular traffic. Is it, for instance, does it happen at night, in the middle of the night when there's not a lot of pedestrians out or other vehicles that are out, what the weather and the roadway is like. But in one of those factors is what are they chasing this guy or female for? Is it for, a stolen credit card, or is it for murder? So that's one of the factors. And then one of the difficulties of these police officers, and we support our good police officers, they have to make a decision, a split second decision, and do this balancing test, which when you read this 11-page policy, it looks like it could take, tens of minutes or even hours to make that determination, and they have to do it in a split second. Now, they have supervisors that are there to help them. They can radio communicate with them through the radio frequency, which is all captured on audio tape and taped by what's called OEMC, the Office of Emergency Management for the City of Chicago. But certainly it's one of the factors. If someone's being, if a terrorist is being pursued by the police, obviously the police should make every effort to get them. But if it's someone for a minor traffic ticket or minor traffic violation and they take off from the police, is it worth it? And the statistics we have from the Department of Justice would say no in that situation.
You know, what you said before is, and you know, and I want to go on record myself as saying I'm a big police supporter. I really am. I mean, the police officers in my neighborhood and the ones that I know, and I represent a lot of police officers in various matters and unrelated to their jobs. These are people who go out every day. I mean, as I always say, if I screw up on the radio, you know, someone doesn't like what I say, that's fine. Yeah. Or if I'm a lawyer and I mess up, you know, my insurance comes in and handles it. But when these guys and women out there make a mistake, they could die, they could be fired, they could lose everything, or they could go to jail for 40 years. So they have to make these extremely important decisions. And I guess I just don't understand how they do it. And they need to do it also in conjunction with others, Tim, because you were saying they have supervisors, but you have maybe in a squad car, you have your partner there. So your partner has to be on board with what you're doing. What do you think happens that the police officers, are they just in a situation where they've got adrenaline going and they want this guy because he ran from them and they're angry and they're afraid he's going to get away? I mean, what do you think contributes to the police officers maybe not making that good decision?
Well, I think a couple things, and I'd like to go on record to say, you know, I'm raising my six kids with my wife in the city of Chicago, and we rely on the CPD and the good officers they have. And, you know, sometimes they make mistakes, sometimes there's bad police officers, but the good ones should be supported. But to directly answer your question, a couple things I think happen. I think the police in the CPD sometimes feel emboldened to get the bad guy at all costs. And sometimes it's just not worth it. And, you know, I've been involved in the Code of Silence case here in the city of Chicago, where we obtained a significant settlement in trial, where we were able to prove that the Code of Silence exists. The old mayor Emanuel acknowledged it. Lori Lightfoot has acknowledged it. So the police, I think, no doubt feel emboldened. But the law is also on their side, because right now we're talking a lot about qualified immunity in the legal community. And it's with these police shootings, should the police have qualified immunity? They have immunity for police pursuits at present. They've had it for decades and decades. And I think the police know that. If their squad emergency equipment, the lights and the sirens are activated and they're involved in a police pursuit crash and someone's killed, they are immune for their negligent conduct. And if you notice, this crash that happened on June 3rd, where Lupe Francisco Martinez, this mother of six, was killed, the police, you know, they've issued a lot of statements. But one of their first statements is that, hey, the emergency equipment was activated. Now, that was sent out for a reason, because when the emergency equipment is activated, they are immune for their negligent conduct. In other words, you then don't just have to prove in the case that they were careless or negligent. You have to prove that their conduct was reckless, that the police consciously disregarded the safety of someone else. It's not akin to, you know, intent, but it's just below, it's between negligence and an intentional act. So I think it's a combination of the police and feeling emboldened. We're going to get the bad guy at any cost. And they know that their conduct is generally going to be immune unless they're...
Let me just ask you, and we've got 2 minutes here, and I want you to tell us where we can reach you. But a couple things is, in this case, what was so amazing about this video, and I'm not encouraging you to look at it, but I mean, it is disturbing. There was not even a slowdown at that intersection at Ashland and I believe at Ashland and Irving Park. I mean, it was in the evening, but I mean, what is the procedure about slowing down in an intersection? Aren't the police supposed to do that, generally speaking?
Absolutely. The pursuit policy talks about when you're supposed to initiate one, and it also talks about whether you continue one. And it talks about, first of all, if the supervisor tells the officer that the pursuit should end, and there's been media reports that happened in Lupe's case, and if, in fact, supervisors told it to end and the officers didn't do it, they're responsible for the reckless conduct. So did they disregard the supervisor's direct order? And, you know, speed, if they're flying through 20, 30, 40 miles an hour over the speed limit through a red light, even with their lights and sirens on, I would argue that that's a conscious disregard for the safety of others. So, in other words, you take in all these factors, and I think in this case, a judge would rule that there's a material question of fact, and this case would have to go to trial, and the city of Chicago is not immune for the conduct here. And I think that's why Lori Lightfoot, our mayor, came out right away and said, we have to relook at this policy, because she has all this evidence that I don't have, you don't have it right now, and I guarantee she's looked at it or been briefed on it, and she knows the city of Chicago has a significant problem in this case.
And one of the things I do want to say is that, you know, and you're right, Tim, during this whole pandemic and during this, all the protests going on, the police sirens are going off all the time. And I really am still amazed by so many pedestrians who don't pay attention to the sirens and don't look where they're walking. And also people in their cars that don't pull over when they hear the sirens. And it's just astounding to me that people don't do that, because that puts everybody in danger, including yourself. So if anyone learns anything today about from this show, I really hope that that's something they learn. Tim Kavanaugh, thank you so much for joining us. Tim Kavanaugh with the Kavanaugh Law Group. Quickly tell us where we can reach you.
Well, you know, we're right on the web at KavanaughLawGroup.com or 312-425-1900.
Thanks for joining us. Stay safe, and we'll have you back on soon.
Thank you, Karen.
All right. Good night. When we come back, we're going to be talking big cat law. We're going to be talking about the Tiger King here on the Karen Conti Show on WGN.